You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The wine community generally takes itself quite seriously, and some people joke about how pretentious it can be at times. So how do you explain Randall Graham, who, as one of California's leading winemakers, the founder of Bonnie Doon Vineyard, gained notoriety for his comic wine labels, his outrageous puns, and some elaborately staged publicity stunts? He's been inducted into the Who's Who of Cooking in America by Cooks Magazine and was named the Wine and Spirits Professional of the Year by the James Beard Foundation. And he also writes, Been Doon So Long, a Randall Graham Binthology is a collection of his various published and unpublished pieces that was released by the University of California Press, and it also won a James Beard Foundation Award. I'm very pleased to welcome to our show Randall Graham, the only person I know who has an asteroid named in his honor. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk about that asteroid. It was dubbed the Rhone Ranger. Now, had you dubbed that term, the Rhone Ranger?
No, it turns out if you're an astronomer and you discover an astral body, you have the right to name it. So there's a wine connoisseur who just happened to discover this particular asteroid and very partial to Rhone wines and to Bonnie Doon wines. So I was very, very fortunate in that regard.
And we'll get to why you've been called a Rhone Ranger later. You seem to be intent on doing everything opposite to what other business people do in this country. Over 14 years ago, you built a successful mass market winery and sold 450,000 cases. That's 5 million bottles in 2006. And then you sold it all off in 2007 and cut back to 35,000 cases?
That's correct. Actually, less than that now, more like 25,000 at this point.
So is that why you've called yourself a bad businessman?
Well, I call myself a bad businessman because I am a bad businessman. But I'm a bad businessman who's trying to follow his fate and his soul and do things that are soulful and do things that are meaningful. So whether that's good business or bad business, I don't really have much choice.
But what happened to those brands that people love so much, Big House Red and Cardinal Zin and Pacific Rim and Old Telegram and Clos de Gilroy? Are they being made by other people? And are they being held to the standards that you created for them?
Well, some of them are continuing with other people. I sold Big House, Cardinal Zin, and Pacific Rim. It's not for me to say what standards they're being held to right now. But, you know, really, it was not my thing. I mean, it was amusing. It was fun. It was sort of a bit of a power trip to make so much wine. Having said that, the only real benefit, the only real tangible benefit was that I was able to get restaurant reservations almost anywhere. But that was really the only benefit.
Because they were carrying your wines.
Pretty much.
And now at 25,000 cases.
I'm a bum.
Who has your wines?
Oh, actually, there are still some lovely places that have our wines. We make less, and we try to make wines that really are more eloquent and maybe more serious.
When you started doing this, did some people think, oh, this is Randall just being Randall? Because of your stunts, do people tend to mistrust you even when you're being sincere?
I think there's possibly some residual distrust. At a certain point, you know, they should not focus so much on what I say but on what I do and taste the wines and judge for themselves. The wines really are very, very good.
You posted a blog entry that reads, I expect that on my deathbed, as I gather my last breath, my protestation that this time I'm serious will be perfunctorily dismissed as a mere attention-getting device.
Exactly. I still have a fear that might actually happen. But.
So how did you come to this? You've described yourself as a permanent liberal arts major at University of California, Santa Cruz. You were a philosophy major?
I was.
Is that a good preparation for going
into
the winemaking business?
It's possibly the best preparation you can give yourself. The technical stuff you can learn anywhere, but thinking about things in a deep way is something, or having an analytic mind is something you really need to be trained to do.
But you did also go to University of California.
At Davis,
where they have that famous winemaking program to learn how to make wine. Did you learn a lot?
I learned a lot. I didn't actually learn how to make wine, but I did learn a lot. It's probably a bit like medical school. After you finish your education, you then actually have to learn your craft.
And you set out initially when you bought your first property to create the great American Pinot Noir.
Yes.
And you abandoned that. There were some pretty good American Pinot Noirs being made. So what happened?
Well, there are some good Pinot Noirs being made. But, you know, the reality is they make really good Pinot Noir in Burgundy, really good Pinot Noir. And, you know, this is really a bit of the problem of the new world. It's kind of the anxiety of influence. We always have this template that we look to, and we're always trying to replicate this Platonic template, and we never quite succeed in doing. The real question is, how can we do something original? Not how we can make a faux Burgundy or a faux Bordeaux, but how can we do something really distinctive?
But then, so you started growing the grapes from the Rhone Valley, but weren't you making faux Rhone wines? Is that what led you to be called the Rhone Ranger?
Right, the faux Rhone Ranger. In fact, and this is something I anguish with, I love our wines, but they're still, perhaps still live in the shadow of a Châteauneuf du Pape or a Bandol. And I'm still asking myself, what can I do to really do something distinctive?
Well, you produced a rock opera called Born to Rhone, so
yes.
You obviously took the commitment rather seriously.
I did.
But does it really matter whether somebody else does it well? Because following the theory of winemaking, you grow the grapes in a particular environment, the so-called terroir.
Yes.
And then you make a wine that reflects the soil and the microclimate and all of that. And it doesn't really matter whether a great wine is made in Châteauneuf du Pape. You can make a really interesting wine reflecting what you've been doing.
Theoretically, yes. The fallacy of that is that, at least in Europe, they've had the opportunity to iterate over centuries and really get a very good congruence between the grape that they grow and how they grow it and where they grow it. You know, and barring climate change, it's a very nice fit. And greatness in wine is not necessarily the greatest grapes or the greatest place to grow grapes, but really the degree of synchronization between all these various elements. And in the New World, in one generation, it's very hard to get that same level of synchronization or congruity.
But what you did instead, you made very fine wines, but you also called attention to the fact that they were being made in a different spirit. For example, you put out a wine called Le Cigar Volant, which means flying saucer.
Right, flying cigar.
The what?
Flying cigar.
Flying cigar. A kind of a homage to Châteauneuf du Pape, because they passed a law that said you can't land a flying saucer on the vineyards.
Right, you can't. You still can't.
And it's against the law
against
for
the
any
law, yes.
aliens.
Yes.
Further, do you think they know that in Alpha Centauri?
Well, the other part of the legislation is even more bizarre. It says that any flying saucer or flying cigar that were to land was to be taken immediately to the pound.
But you made wonderful wines under that name.
What I did and I do, and I love these wines. My question I'm asking myself right now is, can I do more? Can I do better? Can I do something potentially more original?
It comes back to this whole concept of terroir. My guest is Randall Graham, who still has the Bonnie Doon Winery.
Yes, indeed.
And his book, Been Doon So Long, a Randall Graham Vinthology, is still available from the University of California Press.
Just published in paperback just about a month ago.
These days, almost everyone in California pays lip service anyway to the French notion that great wines are more about farming and based on the importance of what the French call terroir. But you have asked if New World winemakers have the integrity and courage to really embrace terroir.
The reality is, you know, we in the New World are so enthrall of economic success that we tend to be very tempted to make wines that pander to certain tastes and certain palates, and therefore we often manipulate the wines to make them come out. To force them to come out a certain way. The reality is people like the way they like those flavors in wines. Personally, I find them often unnatural.
Isn't that what they taught you at UC Davis?
Well, at Davis, they taught you one of the best things about California was its reproducibility, the consistency of the wines. You know, every vintage, we could achieve the same level of quality. And you did this through lots of control. The problem with controlling everything is that you're controlling everything. And so you already know what the outcome is going to be. You're never surprised either negatively or positively.
Well, these are called Van Defort.
Van Defort, exactly.
As opposed to Van de Terroir.
Exactly.
It's all about how you make the wine, how you manipulate the process, even whether you introduce certain microorganisms into the vineyards while the grapes are growing. So this is really all about American know-how and technology.
Yes.
And not about farming.
Well, I mean, it's still farming, but my point is simply that these, you know, on the one hand, this is a good, it seems that it might be a good thing to do to be able to control these things, but my point is that the human intelligence is not as great as nature's intelligence, and therefore it creates an upper limit to how complex these wines can be, how emotionally satisfying they are. We don't really get the same emotional resonance in a man-made product that you get in a product that more reflects the nature's complexity.
And you've talked about actually wanting to grow wine grapes from seed. Now, how long does it take for the seed to wind up developing rootstock and then grapes? Doesn't it take many years?
It takes a while. That's why it's very important to stay fit and and healthy. It's going to take a while.
Haven't you been planting a grape that's a native of the ditches of Texas?
You know, I was going to go to Texas last year to harvest the wild grapes, the Vitis Berlandieri, but it was so hot in Texas, all the wild grapes burned up, and there were no.
So you couldn't do this.
Couldn't do it. Maybe this year we can do it.
But haven't American grape varieties generally produced unremarkable wines? Is the reason that we, so many of our wines are actually from Europe. Even the great American Zinfandel is actually a European grape.
Yeah. Well, bear in mind that the thought I had in going to Texas was not to try to replicate wild Texas grapes and turn them into wine, but rather to use these wild grapes as rootstock and then graft European vinifera on top of that.
You do break with the French winemakers in the fact that you converted all of your wines to screw caps, your bottles. You're also having full disclosure of ingredients on your labeling. Are there secret ingredients in wine?
Well, it's not a secret. It's not a secret for everybody, but wines are terribly manipulated. There are all sorts of things that are put in the wine, most of which are totally benign, some of which customers would like to know if they were informed, whether there's gelatin in wine or bentonite or...
They're putting those things in my wine?
Yes, those are not kosher for Passover, I'll tell you that.
The screw caps are controversial because conventional wisdom is that they're okay for wines that are to be drunk young, but corks are best for wines that are intended to be aged.
It's a little bit counterintuitive, but actually screw caps enable wines to live much longer than the same wine sealed with a cork. Most people don't believe it. You could tell it to them a million times. They still won't believe you, but it's true.
In your book, you have all sorts of things, philosophizing about winemaking, but you also have literary parodies of Joyce, Kafka, T.S. Eliot, Thomas Pynchon, J.D. Salinger, and others, satire, song lyrics, lots of puns, poems, lectures, newsletter entries, and more. So on some level, have you just remained that perpetual college student?
Yes, you could say that. I think it's true.
You do have more followers on Twitter than Robert Parker, the influential wine critic. So does he know about this? And does he know how critical you've been of him over the years?
Well, you know, I'm trying to effect a rapprochement with Mr. Parker, unsuccessfully, I might add. But I was so childish and to go out of my way to infuriate him. I was really, really childish.
Well, a lot of people blame him for everything that's gone wrong in the world.
Right. I blame Robert Parker for this reason. Yes.
Randall Graham's been doing so long. A Randall Graham Vinthology has just been released in paperback. And his wines are being released on a regular basis, although they may be harder to find in New York shops these days than they were in the old days. Any shops that that we know carry them?
Well, Astor Wines carries them. I'm going to be doing an event there very, very soon. I'm sure most of the very fine shops will have Bonnie.
Probably can find it on the internet. Thank you so much for being with us, Randall.
My pleasure.